Mini episode 624 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this mini episode of the FDH Lounge, mini episode number 624. I'm FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and we're doing a segment today we've been looking forward to doing for a while. Jerry Clark from Fox Sports Radio Chicago. We're going to be talking some Cubs, getting into that with them. Jerry, pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you, sir?
Well, fine, Rick. Thanks a lot. It's good to be on. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to get to talk to you. And I guess the way to start on this in terms of talking Cubs is go back to something that we'd put up on Twitter during Game 4. I can't help but ask the question, is it the most Cubs thing ever on Back to the Future Day not to win the World Series but to get eliminated from the World Series?
And wouldn't you know it, that their arch nemesis, the New York Mets, did it to them again? But you know what? This was not something, hey, listen, the Mets beat them. I like the Cubs. I thought the Cubs had a heck of a good season. They won a lot of games. They beat a lot of good teams. But you know what? New York was ready. This guy, Murphy. Wow, Murphy's Law, this guy. Have you seen the stats on this kid? I mean, what he did so far in the playoffs, he's up there with Lou Gehrig. And we could talk about some of the difference.
He used to be on my Fantasy Keeper League, Jerry, he never did that for me back in the day, I have to say.
No, you know, if you look at his season stats, you know, I mean, he was okay. You know, he bats 281, he hits 14 dingers. You know, got a little nice little 449 slugging percentage. But you know what his slugging percentage has been in the playoffs thus far? 1,026.
Wow.
Wow. I wish I'd – listen, whoever that hitting coach is, 3-year contract extension. This guy, really, I mean, he's right up there with Lou Gehrig. He's got, what, 7 games in a row with a homer, a run, and an RBI. That hasn't been done since, like, Lou Gehrig's days. So you know, lots to talk about in New York, isn't there?
Oh, there is. There is. You know, I go back to my childhood. I don't know what it is about second baseman, but if you think back in the day, Brian Doyle back in, I think it was 78, Mark Lemke in 91, there's something about second baseman coming out of nowhere when it hits October, isn't there?
Without a doubt. You know, I remember Lemke over there, wasn't he with the Braves at that time? And you know, we had a nice little second baseman for many years here at the Cubs. Never seemed to get where Murphy's at, but, you know, second basemen are kind of, I remember the years ago with the Marlins, it was Castillo. So they're almost
right.
Joker in your sleeve when you're playing five-card stud. It's nice to take it out every once in a while, and nobody's expecting this.
No, nobody was. It was really, really strange to see that series unwind, and sometimes things just become a freight train kind of barreling down the highway here, because for all of the simulations that anybody might have run before the series, for all the thoughts of all things being equal, or if you played it 100 times, I mean, this is another one of those classic scenarios probably where it might go that way 5 times out of 100. Not to say the Mets wouldn't win the majority of the times, because it's hard to deny them based on how it went, but a very, very unlikely scenario. I'm interested, as I'm sure everybody is, in what the mood is in Chicago, because if you look at it on paper, again, playing with house money, this was a year or two ahead of a schedule, you'd have to say. And if you look at the collection of the young talent, Joe Maddon, et cetera, maybe the most enviable setup in baseball for the next several years. Maybe the team most likely to win 2 titles in the next 5 years out of anybody. But when it's been 107 years, how much solace are people taking from that?
You know what? I haven't heard anybody too deflated about this. I think they came out of nowhere. I mean, the Cubs just kind of got better as the season went on. And they won more and more games. They put more and more distance. I mean, they come up with 97 victories. I was astonished that they had that kind of firepower. But you know what happens? And it's usually reserved for the sophomore jinx. But the Mets knew how to pitch to the Cubs hitters. They knew their tendencies. They knew their strengths, and they knew their weaknesses, and they just kept pitching to the Cubs' weaknesses. Unfortunately, the Cubs got suckered in every time. They really weren't hitting in their zone, and they had a hell of a year at the plate, right? And but what happens, you know, the league does catch up to you. You know, the pitchers get paid too. And but I share the same thought as you, that, you know, you look further and further down the line, and you can never predict these things, Rick. You know, next year the Cubs can come in fourth. You just never know. But we were all hoping that this was kind of, I guess it was false hope. But I really thought, you know, the Cubs were going to go all the way if they beat St. Louis. I thought St. Louis was the key, because that's the one that always had the Cubs number, and that's how it goes. I'm sure that the Toronto Blue Jays say the same thing about the Royals. There's just something about postseason play is when you're poised and ready, you're not going to get beat. And I think Kansas City and the Mets are very, very similar teams.
Well, and it's interesting, because St. Louis has typically really gotten the better of the Cubs franchise over the period of time. I mean, if you're looking at world champion success or any other indicators out there, I don't think the Cardinals were looking past the Cubs, but I know some of their fans might have been. I will tell you, Cardinals fan extraordinaire Bob Barker on the show about 2 weeks ago was already talking some smack about Clayton Kershaw not even bothering with the Cubs. So I wonder to what extent the Cubs
Kershaw
really,
doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. My old boss, Ned Colletti, I think is at the helm over there in L.A. And I worked with Ned in the Cubs PR department. And what a great guy. What a good baseball man, great journalist. I never thought my desk was facing Ned's. I never thought in 1,000 years that he'd be at the helm as a GM, and he's holding his own. I give him a lot of credit. He had a lot of, adversity when they went through all that ownership stuff. And, he held it together. God bless him. I mean, those are good baseball stories. You know, take a look at all the teams. So the Cubs lost. It's a game. Have a great season, 97 victories. I take solace in that. I take sober satisfaction. I'd rather win 97 than lose 97. We're getting too used to that. But look at all the teams that were in the dumper just several years ago that are at the top today. When Burley went over to Toronto after the Sox, let them go into free agency, they were kind of sad, weren't they? The Mets weren't very spectacular. Kansas City was always kind of flat. The Cubs were flat. Look at them today. Now they're the powerhouses. I love to see this transition in baseball where the last, they're on top. Bottom rails on top this year. And I think it's exciting baseball. I like to see new teams. I think it's exciting. I think the Mets are going to be a very good team going down the stretch now.
That's right, because in the last year or two, you've really seen that. Teams making postseason runs, and a lot of times harkening back to at some point in the mid-'80s, with Kansas City or with Toronto when they made their first playoff run in 85. And mm-hmm. And sort of fading out of the spotlight shortly thereafter and bouncing back in. And it's interesting you mention about Ned Colletti, because in a way it does sort of tie to what the Cubs are doing now, because I always go back to that Dodgers organization, Jacksonville class of 2005, I think, when you had Kershaw and Kemp and those guys down there. And that was the genesis of this run that the Dodgers had. And really, what you guys have had with the Cubs in the last year or two, with building this nucleus and then having it come to fruition this year, maybe not comprised the exact same way as far as the identity of the team, but it reminds me a lot of my own Cleveland Indians circa 94, 95. This does look like it's the start of a nice long run for the Cubbies.
Oh, without a doubt. You know what's beautiful about this? Not only here in Chicago, but the same is true in Kansas City, and probably maybe the same is true with the New York Mets. There's a lot of homegrown talent. And, that's the hardest part to do. I'm working at the Cubs. I mean, I worked in the minor leagues and I worked in the major leagues. Developing the players is the hardest thing to do. A manager can't do that because he's not there at A or AA or AAA. He's only there at the parent club. And he inherits whatever comes up through the pipeline. But you know what? To Theo's credits, everybody who's touched these players through their progression up in the major leagues has done the right thing, because they've come up and produced. This Schwarber, wow, this guy is almost, he's like Gary Carter, reincarnate, except on the left side of the plate. He's got a good game. He's got a big future. He's got a huge bat. Hopefully he stays healthy. But he didn't, the bats didn't resonate against the Mets. And that's one thing the Cubs got to look at is how to overcome that. Is it going to be an inspiration or a defeat moving forward? And that's what the Cubs, only the players can feed off that. Is it negative energy or positive energy? Do you overcome that? Because you know what? They're going to have to go home all winter and say, what the hell happened to me? Because we're all expecting, everyone expects to win, don't we? There's a certain psychology of this. And I love Joe Maddon. I think that guy is a great coach, great manager. So good things ahead for the Cubs. I don't know about the White Sox, but the Cubs sure look promising.
Absolutely. And Joe Maddon is a guy that I think, were it not for Bruce Bochy getting 3 world championships with teams that certainly were not the favorites at the beginning of any of those 3 postseasons, if Bruce Bochy wasn't in the picture, I think a lot of people would be saying Joe Maddon, best manager of this generation. So you look at that, and as you point out, the Cubs organizationally doing a lot to get these guys ready for the big leagues. But, you know, then you're in finishing school. You're in the major leagues. You're playing at Wrigley. And you got Joe Maddon there. That's got to be a heck of a way to cap it off, and got to be a big reason that the young sluggers really kind of broke through this year.
Yeah, he's very Joe Torre-like. I think he's a good teacher. I think he's patient. He lets the players be players. And, he seems to get the most out of them, and there's no misdirection. You know, the Cubs the last few years had a lot of throw paws, 10-game losing streaks, We've had under Spain, and I think it was Ron Renicki, we didn't perform at any level to an exception. We always were a team that struggled, that was misdirected. They didn't connect well. There was no team chemistry. I mean, as soon as Maddon walks in, he changed everything. The whole team is revitalized. If that's not manager of the year, and there's a lot of good ones, believe me, but I think that's what the Manager of the Year Award really, what the essence is what Maddon has done. He took a kind of a not-so-good team and, 97 victories.
That's right. That's right. It was probably the most dramatic jump that any of these teams made, and it didn't have the asterisk on it, if you want to call it that. Terry Collins and the Mets, would that have been possible had it not been for the spectacular underachievement of the Washington Nationals? So that's playing a part in it, too. The Cubs didn't need any help to make the postseason. They had a better record than the Mets, and it is a regular season award with Manager of the Year, so I agree with you on that. It's interesting because I had commented on the show at the time, as you mentioned, Renicki and some of the managers of the past, that what happened at the time last year with firing him to bring in Maddon, particularly when it looked like they were going to keep him, I said at the time, that's not really fair, but life's not fair. You have to make this move. If you have a chance to get Joe Maddon, you do what you got to do. You wheel somebody into traffic if you have a chance to get Joe Maddon, and that's kind of what they did. And a year later, I think everybody would agree. I would think it would be pretty uncontroversial to say that it paid off to do that, no matter how ruthless it looked at the time.
I know that people were very, unhappy that we didn't land Joe Girardi at that point in time. I don't blame Joe for staying in New York, because at that time the Cubs were pretty hapless. And I didn't think Joe saw too much of an updraft in the team. But when Maddon came along, that was a last-second opportunity. And here was Theo. He had the money. That's one thing about the Cubs. They will spend money if it means, if it makes sense. I love what they did. And I was one of the big detractors. I was a real... on my shows, I always was kind of very unhappy with Theo Epstein. But today, he sure put me straight, shut my mouth. I'm a big supporter, and I love what he's doing. Very entertaining. It's nice to be a Cub fan again.
Well, the results were kind of slow to come by, but it took, the maturation of these players coming up, which ironically, if you look at the team that bested them, the Mets, it's kind of the same story with the pitching staff, because it was the pitching staff that really emerged this year and did it there. And it's just an interesting kind of mirror image between the two teams, and a lot of speculation out there that this is not the last time we're going to see them be meeting up in the postseason the next couple of years. And ironically, if you look at the questions in terms of the Mets with is Daniel Murphy going to be back, is Cespedes going to be back, and leaning towards a no vote on those things, it seems like maybe a better chance of the Cubs being around in the postseason the next couple of years than the Mets. But is there already any speculation in town there that this is the start of an enduring postseason rivalry, sort of the next chapter in what started with Ron Santo all those years ago?
You know, the one thing in Chicago is that these are young players. There's not a lot of long-term contracts. The Cubs were amassed in when Jim Hendry and John McDonough were here at the helm. So that makes a lot of sense. That puts Epstein and company in a pretty good situation because they can control those players for five more years. But then you think to yourself, do I want to have that guy Schwarberg or whoever else they're going to award money to? I think it's a, you know, you got to start. Winning is a very expensive endeavor. If you wait too long, you're going to pay through the nose, right? Do you start rewarding these players now? Tear up the old contracts, give them a six-year deal that makes sense because these are, the average Cub is 26 years old. So what do? There's a mindset. You know, there's, you have to invest in these players to keep this team around. If these are a bunch of 35-year-olds, you'd say, well, we tried. We couldn't get the most out of them. We're going to go young now. I think the Cubs are sitting pretty good. I think the Mets are sitting pretty good. A lot of young talent there. And you have to reward that. Even if they're, you know, not at that maturation point where they're, you know, going to be free agents or, you know, arbitration eligible, I think the movement today, Mark, is that people are going to be they're going to be going to the direction of, you know, paying their players before they become free agents. Keep them off the market.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's funny that I referenced as a point of comparison before. The mid-90s Indians and the run that they went on, because what you're talking about right there, that's what John Hart kind of pioneered in the modern game, is trying to lock up these young guys, get them to deals ahead of time. And because of that, it's very, very interesting to me. There was a lot of people running around screaming and yelling before the season about the unfairness of the Cubs keeping Chris Bryant out in order to keep his extra year. And it's interesting because I never bought the narrative that Chris Bryant and his agent were a couple of helpless serfs, because they know that the Cubs are going to want to get a deal done. All they have to do to get the leverage back is say no hometown discounts, and the Cubs are going to change their tune in a hurry. So I always thought that was kind of interesting, because the young players, they know the team wants to lock them up. So if they play a little bit of hardball on what it takes to sign that deal, then it doesn't matter if the club keeps them down a little bit more so now. You can always extract it out of them on the back end, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a, I don't know, I think that's kind of a mistake on ownership part. I mean, what's it going to be a few games? I mean, what you're doing is you're really sending a signal out to your players that, you know, it's all about the money. And at this level, with the Cubs, you know, I wouldn't sweat out $1 million, because you know what's going to happen? They're going to make that money probably twice that when Brian takes the field. You don't always have to win the World Series to be a successful team. All you got to do is win some games, treat people right, and they'll come through the turnstiles, and your team will always be solvent. And to me, if I were an owner, I guess I'm more of a businessman like Jerry Reinsdorf is. I look at the bottom line, the solvency of the team, because I hate to see teams go bankrupt.
That's right. That's a very good point. And I have to say, with no small amount of bitterness on my part, that's the same thing that Cheap Dolans did this year with Francisco Lindor, is keep him down until June. And by that time, the season was pretty much already out of hand, and there was a big turnaround once he got up. But, yeah, that's the thing that teams do, is they prize the economics of the future above winning for today. And that is kind of a common thing, certainly, going around baseball. A lot of fascinating stories coming out of the world of Chicago sports, and we definitely look forward to catching up with you subsequently as these things happen, regardless of sport, Jerry. It's been a real pleasure to have you in the FDH Lounge today, sir. Thank you very much. Please don't be a stranger.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot for having me on. It's a pleasure talking sports with you.
I really appreciate it. I thank you so much, Jerry, for being on the program today. And thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 624.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio,
Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.